Python string slicing has always been pretty neat, and it's pretty exact to how it was in Python 2 versus Python 3. So in an example up at the top, we've got c:\windows_system_interpreter.exe. And it shows you the index offset into that string starting from the right at 0. So if I wanted to get to the W, the first one there, it's offset 3. And then below that, you see -30, -29, -28. And let's see what that means here as an example. So I'll just create a quick string in Python, and I'll call it path equals, let's do /proc sys kernel randomize va space, which is the flag for ASLR on Linux. So we've got that. If I say path, it just prints it out for us. So if we want, we can say path, and I can say start at offset 0 and then range, go all the way until offset 5, and then print that out. And you can see it prints out the substring starting at /proc. We can also say something like, how about starting at position -6:, and then nothing at the end, so onward until you reach the end of the string. And we get _space in that case. So really easy to go in and deal with these substrings, which is nice. And we can also split. So I can say path.split method, and we can type in what do we want to split based on? Well, what's the delimiter in the string? It's a slash, right? And what that does is returns back to us a list with each element separated based on the delimiter or value that we gave it to split based on, which is kind of neat. We can also, if you're curious, ever wonder what a particular data type is, we can say type and then give it the variable, and it comes back and says, well, that's a string. So some basic items there as well. So just some other examples you can see up on the screen, but nothing outside of what we showed already. The only thing I think we did not look at is look at that bottom second from the right side, second from the bottom, file name, :-1. You can see that reverses the string, which is kind of cool. So printf style format strings. Format strings in Python 3 and with Python in general are pretty neat, pretty powerful. Back like in the printf suite of functions associated with the C programming language, since that's a low-level language, you can get yourself into trouble, and we'll talk about an example about that in a moment. But let's talk about basic format strings. You can do it the top way, the top example. I'm just, because I've been doing it for a long time, the bottom way just feels more natural to me, the way in the middle, I should say. But let's go through it. The top one says format numbers, and we've got the curly brackets, and then we've got this 0. And in the second set of curly brackets, we've got a 1 at first. That corresponds, look at the far right where it says dot format, and then you've got kind of within that parentheses or tuple, two arguments there. Well, the 0 in the first curly bracket specifies grab the first one, 3.14, and that's going to be used in that position. And then the second one to the right has the 1, and that corresponds to the ABC. And then it says after 0:, 0>9. So we're basically saying 9 is the width. And then .2f means two of those bytes must be past a floating point, and the f means floating point. So that's a float. And if you look directly below it, format numbers, and it's a width of 9 with two bytes after the floating point, and it grabs that 3.14. And on the right side, it says capital X, and then all the way up to 9, so use the value X as the width populated with that byte, the value, and then 9S string, and then it takes an ABC and pads it on the outside up to 9 with those X characters. The middle one says format numbers %010D, and then we've got inside of square brackets %10.4f. So the brackets are unnecessary. They're just there to kind of show you how it ends up regarding to position. So below you can see it says format numbers, and it's got a bunch of zeros, and that zero in the front means lead with the zeros, and then 10D. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 bytes. So it's 10 is the width. Decimal is how we want it represented. It grabs that 150. But notice in this case, we're using the percent operator. Then in the next one to the right, %10. So 10 is the width, with 4 of those bytes have to be after the floating point. And so you can see the number doesn't need all those spaces, so it kind of pads it out. And that's why we showed with the square brackets, so you could see the padding. Then down below that, you see strings. Again, square brackets unnecessary, but it shows you how they end up alignment-wise below it. And you could see 10S for 10 is the width string, and it's going to grab the A over on the right. And then negative 10, so start from the left side and then grab the B, and you can see that below it. And then finally, on the right, it says C dot center. 10 is the width, and so it puts it right in the middle because you said center. And then below that, you can see a bunch of different examples of additional format strings that we pretty much covered. The only one I don't think we covered is the %%, which just means you print a percent sign. Otherwise, it wouldn't know to do that. So you're kind of escaping it almost. So before we move out of format strings, let's just look at an example on Windows, because why not? I think they fixed it in Windows 10 in this particular version, but let's see. The sort's still there. Let's see, percent, A, percent X. No, yep, they finally fixed it. It wasn't until some version of Windows 10 where they fixed that bug. So I'm going to go over to this Windows 7 system. I know it's there, and it's still there today, I believe. And I'm just showing you an example of a format string bug. So we say here, sort A, and then, so let me go back to a better position so it's not taking up the screen. So sort AAA, percent X, percent X, percent X, percent X. And notice how it prints out this garbage next to AAAA. There's a vulnerability in the sys.error function inside the binary that they forgot to include a format specifier, and this was written in C. Since they forgot to include a format string or specifier, we can include them like you see here, and we can cause things to be leaked out. And now you can see we're actually leaking out the value we're entering in itself off the stack, which is 41414141. And watch what happens when I change percent X to percent S. We should get a crash here. And there's the postmortem debugger kicking up. And you can see my AAAA ending up in a processor register. The reason it's doing that is because the percent S format string says we're expecting whatever value on the stack is at that position, whatever pointer there, in this case 41414141, we're going to go to that memory address and print out what's there as a string. We're expecting a pointer to a string, but we pointed it to 41414141, and that's causing a crash to occur because it's invalid memory. So kind of neat to see. Now you would think, well, Python's interpreted language, you can't get yourself into trouble, but wait till we get to the C types module. So additional data types here. We've got list, tuples, and dictionary. Lists are mutable. You can make changes to them. Tuples are immutable. And we'll get to dictionaries in a second. So if we look at a tuple and a list, let me go to Kali. And we're in Python 3. So we'll say x equals square brackets. And then I'll say y equals parentheses. If we say type X, it's a list. If we say type Y, it's a tuple. And this means something. If I say X, or let's do a dir X, this shows me like the method supported. So we can see append, and we can sort, and we can reverse. If we do the same thing, dir on Y, it doesn't have a whole lot. It's got count and index. So what does that mean? It means we could say X.append and add something in, like banana. And if we look at X, it's got the element banana now. We can say X.append tree, and it's got that in there now. And one more, we'll do X.append, let's do jungle. And we've got three items in there, three elements. We can say X.sort, and that'll put it in alphabetical order. And now you can see jungle and tree were swapped. So we can make changes, is my point. We can also then remove things from it if we want. We can count the number of times something appears and other items. But what about Y? If I say Y.append and try to enter something in, it says no, because it's immutable. So if you don't want something to be changed or be able to be changed, then make it a tuple. If you want it to be able to change, then maybe a list is more appropriate. So a dictionary is often called, you've probably heard of associative arrays or hash tables in other languages. It's used for quick lookups, and the discrete math and such behind it, it's, if you think of like binary search trees or hash table collision problems and stuff, and how companies like Google, for example, need to be able to have things looked up very quickly. That gets into discrete math, but this is just a quick lookup table. And we've got like an example on the top right in the bottom image. PIDs equals, and we've got system, which is going to be the key, and then the value next to it after the colon is 4. So system is the key, 4 is the value. SMSS.exe is a key, 21 is a value, so on and so forth. So let's do a quick example of this one as well. So I'll say a variable called questions equals, and then we're going to create a dictionary. To do that, we're going to use this curly brackets here, and I'll say the key is first. What is your favorite pizza topping? And we'll put a question mark, and we'll close that out with a quote, then colon, and now it's going to be the value. And I'll just put pineapple. And close that, and then we can add one more in. How about what is your favorite color? And then I'll close that out, colon, and then in quotes we put the value, which I'll put gray. Oh, what did I do wrong here? I forgot the curly bracket on the end. And then if we say type questions, you can see it's a dictionary. Okay, great. So we've got that. So if I type in questions by itself, it comes back and just shows me everything inside of it. But imagine this is larger and we want to do a quick lookup. We could do something like questions, so the dictionary name, dot get method, and then we ask it one of the keys. We say, what is your favorite pizza topping? Close that out, and it comes back and says pineapple. So quick lookup. And then we could say something like, how about if we want to know if something exists in the dictionary? Or we could say, what, the string, what is your favorite color? And then in the dictionary, which is questions. And it comes back and says, true, yes, it's in there. Well, what is your favorite animal? It's going to come back and say false. That doesn't exist inside the dictionary. We can also say something like, well, I just want to get the keys. So variable name of the dictionary dot keys. And it comes back and says there are the keys only, or values. And we can get just the values for that. So just interesting to play with that. If you've done it a million times before, you're like, well, this is really exciting, man. So let's move on. Working with lists. We just did working with dictionaries, so we can probably skip that one. We also did working with lists already. We looked at appending things. We looked at sorting things. We can also, as you see on the screen here, we can extend stuff. We can reverse the order. We can count the number of times something appears. We can insert something into a specific position. We've got a lot of flexibility that we don't have with tuples. And then with dictionaries, here's just another example of what I pretty much showed. We can create the dictionary, and here we got, are you a robot? One thing to point out, look at the second line there. If we want to add an additional entry inside the dictionary, we use the square brackets. So we're saying captcha answers square brackets, and then we go in and add a new key and value. So pretty neat as well. So Python control if, else if, and else. Here's a good example. You can see we're saying a variable called result equals exploit target, and then it's got a string. Well, that string's an IP address. So the result is going to be the return back from that function exploit target that we're calling. So we're calling the function exploit target. We're passing in an argument of 10, 10, 10, 10. And then if the result that comes back from that function call is equal to 0, great, everything was okay because that's a good status code, prints out some stuff and increments some counter. If the result that comes back is equal to 1, we've got else if result is equal to 1, then print out it was not successful, check the Wireshark capture, that means it was an error. Else, if any other value comes back, print unknown error, sorry. For loops, we're saying path variable equals, and it's a C colon backslash Windows path. And then we split it. We looked at that earlier. So we split it based on the double backslashes. And then we're saying for directory. So directories are iterator variable. We're iterating through the elements in path list. And then we're printing out the directory and then the length of directory. So pretty simple. Useful Python built-ins. So print, length, int, ord, and other items are always there by default. They're just part of the global, you know, they're built in. And print, we know what that does. It prints things out to the screen, like you see on the right there. It prints it out to standard out. Length is another one. We can get the length of any variable or object and get the return. Int, A nice thing about that is, like, one example would be if you create a little script and you're taking in arguments with your Python script, that's by default going to be a string. So if we want that to be treated as an integer, we can say int and then argv1, which would be the first argument coming in after the program name. And we're treating that string now as an int. So we can just, you know, typecasting and stuff like that's very easy. And then the bottom there, you got ord, which stands for ordinal. The best way to show this or explain this is to do a little demo of it, but you see some examples on the screen there. Let's look at it in the interpreter. So let's create a binary string. I'll say x equals, and then inside quotes, I'm going to say slash x ff 413366, and then ee and maybe 90. So we got a nice binary string there. If I say x, it should just print out the string, right? Well, that looks a little off, right? It's printing out anything that's ASCII readable for us automatically. What if I say print x? Well, then it looks even different than it did before. So, and it's kind of stuck for some reason. That's interesting. I have no idea why it's stuck. It does not like that not byte. Okay, well, I killed my command prompt, whatever. Let's quit out of here. Let's start it back up again. Python 3. Now I'm curious if it does that again. I'm going to put a not byte on the end. So we'll say x equals hex ff, hex 41, hex 33, hex 66, hex, put a not there on the end, and then say print x. And it hangs again. That's interesting. Control D breaks me out completely. I think it's some issue with this language pack or character there. So let's go back in Python 3, and we'll do that again, but this time I'll just do 88 on the end, and then print x just works fine. Great. But it's still not printing out in the true binary string form that I want it to, and that's where ordinal comes in. I'm going to say for I in, and then we'll do a range. We'll start at 0 and go to the length of x. So now we're going to for loop. I didn't close out my there. So we're in a for loop. And I'm going to say print, and then let's do a slash slash x. We're escaping the first slash, so it prints out the slash x like I want it to. And then percent 0 to x. It's a format string and says the width is 2 and the x means hexadecimal. So we've got that closed out now. And then we'll just go ahead and put our percent sign to indicate we're about to pass in the format string items. And we'll say ord and then x I. And close that out. 1, 2, that should be good. And there you can see it prints it out as the binary string as we were expecting it. So that's just one way to do it. And of course, if we want to go in and have it printed on one line, we can do that thing before the end equals and then quotes there. And that prints it out on the same line. So different options we have, or we can do it without the spaces in the middle. All right, jump back out, and that's ord. So imagine if like you're dealing with packet data or something. Building functions, a couple of easy examples here. Let's just create one real simple. So we'll say define. I remember somebody in class one time didn't know you could hit Control L on Linux, you know, shell and clear the screen even inside Python. So he like built into his default name, his globals, a little function that said something like, I'm going to make it up, but it was something like import OS to import the OS module. So define clear, and then system will call it to clear the screen. So we talk clear now, and it clears the screen for us. So now we've got this function that will clear the screen anytime we want. Well, that's a dumb function. Let's create another dumb function, but at least one that takes in arguments. I guess we could use os.system, and then we could take in arguments that way. But let's just do a simple calc function. I'll say define a function called calc, and it's going to take in two arguments, x and y, greatly named. And then we'll say when you call it, print, and then x plus y. That's all it does. Now we can call calc anytime we want, give it two arguments, and it adds them together and returns back control. So just a simple example of a function. Exceptions, these are important and good. We have a lot of control with Python. So here we're saying open etsy shadow, and we're saying and read. So open etsy shadow and then the read method, and it comes back and says, no, you're not allowed to do that. You don't have permission because maybe you're just a regular user. You're not root. So, okay, well, the error message that we're getting, or the error name on the bottom left of the command line output, is permission error. So we can accept on what we're expecting to get as an error, and we can handle it instead of the script just crashing or the program crashing. So in this example, we add a handler. You can see down at the bottom, we're saying try with the Etsy shadow file open as the name file handles. It's going to be a file handle, the Etsy shadow. Go and read through it. If that exception that we're expecting, which is permission error, occurs, then don't crash the script. Print to the user, you do not have permission to open this file. And then if any other exception comes back, we're kind of creating a generic or global handler that says accept on any other exception as E, print something else happened, and we've got the little format string position on the right of the string, and we're going to populate the error message into that position if one occurs. So Python modules, this pre-built functionality, I mean, I remember seeing XKCD, I think it was, some joke a long time ago, and there were these religious figures, and it was the son of the one religious figure said, "Father, how does gravity work?" And he said, "Simple, son, it's import gravity," and it was a silly Python joke. And it's true, their modules have been written to do everything, and you're basically just importing the modules you need, and then scripting or tying together what you want them to do for you. So there's lots of modules that come in by default. You can get third-party modules. You can use something like pip to go and grab those. It's kind of a package manager for Python. And we just import them. There's different ways to import them. You saw, we just did one a moment ago that said import OS. And there's a couple ways that we can do it. Let's try it. So if I say dir and leave that empty, you can see I've got the variables I created, but also the OS module is listed. If we say globals, we can look at our global namespace, and we see a lot of the same. So let's clear the screen. Now, if I say from OS import everything, now look at our namespace. All that functionality from the OS module is now imported in, and we can call it directly by its name. We don't have to do module name dot and then the method. We can just say write. Like fucking type, like that. It's a built-in function. But that doesn't sound like a great idea, does it? With all those functions being mapped in, what if you named a variable in your script, your program, a name that gets imported in, it's going to get clobbered. It's going to get overwritten. So that's a namespace conflict. So probably not the best way to do it. Let's drop out there for a second. Unless you really need a ton of the functionality in a module. So we could say something like, in from time import sleep. So now we've imported a single function from the time module, and we could say something like help time.sleep, and time is not, what do we do here? Import time. So help time by itself. Why is it not working? So sleep comes up by default. I'm not sure. So help OS. Interesting. How about if we import that again? I think that's just because I didn't import the module. That's all. So help OS, and there we work. Okay, it works. So all I did was made a dumb mistake. I forgot I didn't import the actual module, so it's not available with help, only the function that we imported from that module. Either way, there's good introspection and stuff that we can use. So now that we've got sleep imported, if we say sleep, it says it's a built-in function. Help sleep. And it says you can specify a number, and it sleeps for that many seconds. So, okay, sleep 3 seconds. And it sleeps for 3 seconds, and we get control back. Now, this time I'm going to drop out, go back in. I'm going to create a variable called sleep, and it's a string that equals tired. So it's just the sleep variable just assigns to tired. So now if I say from time import everything, and I say sleep, it doesn't print tired out anymore. It's a namespace conflict. We could also say something like from time import sleep as tired. And now tired is a sleep function. So a lot of flexibility is all I was trying to show. So file IO, let's do a quick example. I think I've got a file called ingredients. So if I cat ingredients.txt, it's just a list of a few different things, right? So let's go back into Python. And here we'll say file content equals open and then slash root /ingredients.txt. And now we got to specify the permissions. So I'm just going to say open it in read mode and then go ahead and read it. So we've done that. And we'll go ahead and say file content. And you can see one string with all those new line characters. It just takes it all in as one string. So we go back to the slide here for a moment. You can see we're kind of doing some of the same stuff on the slide. So I'm just doing what it's doing on the slide, but with a different example here. Okay, so one string. Well, what if I have want to have a little bit more power and I want to read through lines? How about we say with open, so with this file open, /root ingredients.txt, open that in read mode again. And we're with opening it and as file handle. I got a syntax error again. Let me see where it is. It's the problem with doing things on the fly is you make mistakes. So I just forgot to put the colon on the end. So we've got that opened up now. So while it's open, file as list variable will say equals file handle dot read lines. All right. So now if we print this as is, if we just go through and read lines and read through it, then it's probably going to have a bunch of new line characters in it. Let me see what it does by default. So there you can see all those new line characters. That just annoys me a bit. So let me see if there's a better way we can do this. How about list? We're going to list them out, each one, map, do lambda, if I can type. And I'm just stripping out those new line characters because I don't like them. And then file as list and then close that out. And that's better. So at least we printed out now that the new line characters, but that's just a peeve of mine. So that's example of working with some file IO. And there are different types of permissions. You've got write binary and read bytes and all kinds of different permission options. And they're listed down in the notes if you want to take a look at those. So the different modules, some of the default modules or commonly used modules, the sys module is one. We've got some built-in functionality. This is not in any way, shape, or form conclusive, but we've got exit. Well, that exits out, right? Platform, we can see what platform we're on. You can see the example of Win32. Get the Windows version. That's a function or a method available inside that module. And if we're on a Windows system, we get the result. argv. That's the argument vector. If you're familiar with like C, you've got argc and argv and the arg counter and the arg vector. So in this example on the right, it says if the length of sys.argv is equal to 1, print out you must specify a target because it's always going to be 1 because the program or script name is, it counts as 1. And then argv offset 1, so argv 0 is going to be the program name. argv1 is going to be the first argument you pass. So this isn't comparing it to argv1. This is comparing it to the argument counter, basically. How many command line arguments are there? There's always going to be one because of the program name. And this is saying we want it to be more than one because you're supposed to enter in an argument. And of course, you can specify if it's not equal to 2 and give a usage statement or something, whatever you want. Standard error allows us to display output in standard error instead of standard out. So an example over here, we've got print error and the file equals sys.standard error. So there's 0, 1, and 2, right? Standard in, standard out, standard error. So the OS module, you're just looking at system module. OS module's got additional, and this is not conclusive as well, or comprehensive. We've got get the effective user ID, and the snippet on the far right says, if OS module dot get the effective user ID is not equal to 0, print that you must be root. So just a little, you've probably seen that before where it's checking to make sure that you're root. List directory, just to ls. Remove, if we've got the rights to do so, we can remove things from the file system. Stat's going to give you your attributes and timestamps and such. System could be potentially dangerous depending how you use it, but that's going to execute a string you give it with your shell. So we want to be careful with that one for things like command injection. Popen is going to execute a command, returning back a file object with output, and then you want to read lines through it. The C types module is quite interesting. It's extremely powerful. From a high level, what it does is it allows you from inside your Python script or your interpreter to load in DLLs or shared objects on Linux or DLLs from Windows into your Python process and utilize that functionality. So you suddenly have to be a little bit more familiar with C++ or C because you have to concern yourselves with the additional data types that those languages use and the structs and sort like that. So keep that in mind, but extremely powerful. We can load in you can use load library, load in a DLL, and utilize Windows DLL functions. So that's the power it gives you. It's great for things like debugging and such. A couple of things to note, though. There's two different primary calling conventions. It's not the only ones, but there's standard call and cdecl. And we'll talk more about this in book 4 in the first module, but they determine things, the calling conventions, that is, like what order are arguments to be placed, who's going to clean up the stack, stuff like that. And on Windows, you can choose to compile between one or the other. Now, standard call is a little bit less flexible. It doesn't support variable length argument lists, and that actually, that fact helps us determine if it's been compiled with standard call or cdecl. So look what's happening in the code. We're saying standard call equals, we're going to load library with the ctypes module and Windows DLL, crtdll.dll. And then we go to utilize printf from inside crtdll. And we say sans is awesome, blah, blah, blah. And it comes back and throws an error, probably called with too many arguments, 8 bytes in excess. That would not be an error message that we'd probably get from if it was compiled with cdecl. So that helps us learn about which calling convention was used so we know how to handle it with ctypes. And in the bottom example, the middle one, you can see it works fine, no error message. The bottom example there, remember previously I showed the example of sort and said that's a low level, the printf family of functions and those low level languages are where you can get into trouble potentially. And I said, but don't assume just because you're using Python that you're safe. I was referring to this. Here we're using printf using ctypes, and we're doing %x, 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 %n. Well, %n is a special format specifier that attempts to go to the pointer that it picks up off the stack at that offset and write the number of bytes in the print statement to that location. And it's infamous. It's been known to cause write what where opportunities for attackers. Windows by default doesn't support %n, or it shouldn't. And, but it does support %s and %x and other ones that can also get you into trouble. The only point here is that if you incorrectly or improperly use ctypes, you could get yourself into trouble. So this is a really cool module, PE file, that allows you to go and modify or list out and access executables and DLL file structures. It's not there by default, but you can install it with pip, and we've already done it for you on the Windows virtual machine that you're using. And instead of looking at the slide here, let's try out a couple of examples, not on Linux. That probably won't work so well. So here's our Windows 10 system. We're going to try a couple things out. I'm in my dev folder. Let me think through this so I don't mess anything up, what I want to show. So let's first copy from /windows-sys-wow64, and we'll grab ntdll, and we'll copy it to the dev folder. It's already there. Yes, let's overwrite it because I don't know what we've done to it. So we've got a fresh copy of ntdll in our dev folder. I'm not currently in an administrative command prompt, so I don't want to mess with the one at the target anyway, just in case I screw something up. So we'll import, actually, first Python 3, and now import PE file, and that's done because we've already put that on there for you. And now we'll say exe variable equals PE file dot PE method, C colon backslash backslash, we got to escape it, dev backslash backslash, and then ntdll.dll. And we've taken that in. So now we've got that. We're going to say hex exe dot, so exe is our variable dot, let's print out the optional header, image base, and close that out. And that prints out what that is when ntdll was compiled, it chooses a load address where it prefers to be loaded. Now, it's compiled with dynamic base, so it's going to get rebased each time. But if you were to open it up in IDA or something, that's probably the address that it should use. So that's just one example. Another example, this is a cool one. We can go through and say for each function in executable directory entry export dot symbols. I want to print out the export address table. I think that's what I'm going to try and do here. So print each function, that's the iterator, dot name, and also print each function dot address. And hopefully this works. And there we go. So we're printing out all the symbols that are exported and the address, which is pretty neat. So let's clear that. All right, go back up to the slide. So Python introspection, we've seen some of this already. We looked at globals, we looked at DIR, we looked at type, we looked at help, and you got to see what all those do. It's they're very useful. It's almost like using a man page when you use help, and you can hit Q to get out. You can say type and see what kind of data type it is. We can do DIR and look at all the variables and methods of an object or global to see the namespace. So we did all of that, but it's very useful. You should get used to doing that. And in summary, now I'm going to show a quick demo of IDA Python, but in summary, you can see it's a powerful scripting language with great community support. Python users generally seem to be very friendly online. Back on my Perl days, or a little bit of Perl days, not so much, but a little bit, I remember going out to a forum, I think it was like perlgods.com or something, and I just typed in a simple question and posted it, kind of like how you do in Stack Overflow. And I came back 5 minutes later, and you would think I kidnap someone's dog. Like, they were like, you're an idiot. This has been answered 10 times. I'm closing this thread. This is in a wrong location. And they're like arguing with each other about a question I posted. I was like, okay, I think that was one of my final straws with Perl. So you do the same thing on Python forums and they say, welcome friend. That's a great question. Even though it's been answered before, let's answer it again for you. And then people start debating over the best way to solve that problem or answer the question, and they're very cordial with each other. I remember one time I was in a bind and I needed some code written and I didn't quite know how to do it in Python. It was this multi-threaded thing with some subclassing going on. And so I posted up a little snippet and kind of some pseudocode of what I wanted to be done, and then came back an hour later and they had written like hundreds of lines of code for me to do exactly what I needed because they wanted to help so much. So like you're able to farm out development to these forums sometimes, depending on the friendliness of them, but you shouldn't take advantage of that. Either way, it's good stuff. Python's very cool language. Let's look at an example of IDA Python, and then we'll go to an exercise. So I'm going back over to my Windows 7 system where I've got IDA, and I've got Sophos Antivirus. What I want to do is I'm going to run this script I wrote called band functions, and it's highlighted at the bottom. When we run band functions, what it's going to do is go through the input file, which in this case is Sophos Antivirus main engine. It's going to look at its imports table to see if it uses any banned functions per Microsoft. That would be functions like strcat, strcopy, printf, sprintf, stuff like that. And if it finds any banned functions, because they're known to have problems associated with them, if they're improperly used or even used at all, it will print them onto the screen, and then it will cross-reference every call to that function. And so we'll be able to double-click on the results and see how many times things are called. So let's do that. Double-click band functions, and over on the left in the output window, you can see it found strcopyn, strcopy, strncopy, strcat, wsprintf. So all these different band functions, and if we scroll up a bit, you can see all the hits. Like, so it's called strcopy like 10 times, which is crazy. So if we double click on one of those hits like strcat, it takes us to the precise location as to where it's called. Now this script also sets breakpoints on any call to the band function. And the idea there is so that you can go and run the program and do some things. And if you hit one of the breakpoints, you can check to see what you did to get there. And since it's strcopy, you would say, well, there's no bounds checking on strcopy. Can I modify the string that's being copied into memory into a buffer and maybe get a buffer overflow opportunity? And notice here, stir copy is called not once, but multiple times. There's stir cat, stir cat, stir copy. If we go up here, here's stir copy again. So multiple times within the same function, not just the same program, those band functions are being called. So kind of interesting to see. But with IdaPython in general, we can do different things like interact directly with the input file. So I clicked on this load effective address instruction, and I could say something like, let's see. We can call functions like get mnemonic based on screen EA. So if I say screen, so hex, screen EA, that prints out the address where the cursor is currently pointing. We could also say something like get mnemonic, screen EA, and it prints out the mnemonic at that location, which is load effective address. Or we can say something like get operand, OPND, screen EA, and then which operand? I'll say offset 0, and we get EAX. Is there a second operand? Yes. So like we can interact with the input file via these APIs, and we can script this stuff up. So we can write like tools to find ROP gadgets and code sequences or look for conditions by scripting it up. And it's just super powerful. So I just wanted to introduce that real quickly. So let's move into this Python script exercise that you will be doing primarily on your own, but I'm going to show you a couple things to get started. Now, if you are not familiar with Python, if this is your first introduction to it, or if you're newer to it, this is going to be challenging, but it's at least it gives you a goal, and we've given you a starting point. We've given you a starter script that does certain things, but it needs more work to get it to where you want it. So the file, the script called PEScan, and on your target, it may be called PEScan underscore fix me. There's going to be another one, PEScan easy finished, and you'll see those in a moment. Either way, you'll figure that out. Python 3 will say the script name, and we can run it against something like an executable in DLL. So let's see what it does. Let's go over to Windows 10, and then we'll talk about what you're supposed to do to it to improve it. So I'm back on my Windows 10 system, and I'm going to say PE and hit tab. There's one called PEScan difficult finished, PEScan easy finished, PEScan fix me. Start with the fix me one. Even though it just says PEScan on the slide, you can change the name if you want to. But PEScan fix me. And then we're going to say C colon backslash Windows system 32 and then star.exe. And look what it does. It does nothing. It crashes. No module name PE file. That's because I didn't put Python 3 on the front. Python 3. Try that again. That's much better. So I didn't put Python 3 in the front, so it decided to use Python 2 because that's within the path. That's what's in the path. So anyway, it works now. What it's doing is going through and looking for any instances of certain functions, like band functions, like printf, inside the different executables in System 32. So I'm going to hit Control C to stop it, but that's really neat that it's doing that because you can find out whether or not a function's used in a binary through a script very easily. So that's one thing we can do. Let's do another example. So Python 3. So it's up arrow. Let's get rid of the second half. And then we can see we've got PEScan fix me minus F. Let's see what this does. C colon backslash Windows system 32. And then this time star.dll. Let me hit enter. And look what this is doing. It's going through the DLLs and it's letting us know what exploit mitigations were compiled into it, like control flow guard. Every one of these is coming back with control flow guard, but that one isn't. So I hit control C. You can see right, let me scroll up. I think I saw it. Guard, guard, guard. So this AEEVTS.DLL flags no SCH, NX compatible dynamic base. It's not compiled with control flow guard. So it's pretty neat to see that. We can see which exploit mitigations by looking at these DLL characteristics. So that's another option, or you can specify a single DLL if you wanted to do so. Now let's try this out. This time we'll say run the same script again, but instead of minus F, and you can look at the switches, of course, by running the script by itself or looking at the code, and you're going to have to do that anyway. minus T. I specifically want to see if dynamic base, which is going to be whether or not the DLL gets rebased, like ASLR, SQL and backslash Windows system 32, and then cmd.exe. And it comes back and says toggle is not currently supported. Well, guess what? That's going to be one of the things we want you to do. So it found out that cmd.exe uses printf, but the minus T flag is not supported. And one of the things you need to do is go and fix that. We'll talk about that more in a moment. Let's look at another example here. So this time, if I say Python 3, SQL and backslash dev, and then PE scan easy finished, this is what you're going to have to get yourself to. You're not supposed to use this script. You're supposed to edit the other script and get yourself to this point. I'll say minus T dynamic base and same path, SQL and backslash Windows system 32 cmd.exe. And what did I screw up this time? Permission denied. Great. I'm not an admin. So you could do this as admin. Did I copy cmd.exe over here? Let's see. Nope, I didn't. So let me go and grab that. So copy SQL and backslash Windows system 32 cmd.exe to the local folder and clear the screen. Bring up my command, and this time we'll just go and look in the dev directory. All right, now we run that. It said flag changes written to cmd.exe.new. So that toggle option actually lets us go and not just check it, because we can check it with the other command, but we're able to go in and actually change those flags, which is pretty powerful to be able to do that. And then we can go and look at the .new one. So we could say c:\dev/pe-scan. Easy finished in this case, minus F, and then we'll bring up the cmd.exe.new. Well, let's look at the old one first. I didn't type Python 3 again. All right. You will make these mistakes as well, don't worry. So Python 3, no files found. I forgot to put dev. And there you can see control flow guard, NX compatible, dynamic base, high entropy, virtual addressing. So let's do it again on .new. And we toggled this one, I hope. So there you can see that dynamic base has been turned off. So this instance of cmd.exe would not participate in dynamic base. It's pretty neat that we can go through with the script and make those edits. And this script was created by Mark Baggett, who authored the Sec 573 Python for Pentesters course, a really cool one to check out and also help out with this module. So big thanks to him. Your goal though, and the exercise is going to take you through this. Here's the introduction. You saw some of the things we already did, is to go through, look inside the source file. It's going to take you through the interpreter. You're going to enter commands in manually, and then you're going to go and, make the changes. And like it says, easy challenge, allow a user to specify one flag to change by name. And you're going to do this using XOR. And if you XOR a bit, you can turn it on or off. So you got to use some Boolean operations there. And a harder challenge, allow NARG, so multiple arguments to be specified at once. So go ahead and work through this one at your own pace and good luck. And again, if you're newer to Python, no big deal if you don't get through it. It's something you can push off to another time, but you can expect some questions on the exam on how to go and modify these things. Let's move on now to a Python-based packet crafting tool called Scapy or Scapy. We'll then get into an exercise where you'll get a chance to exploit a vulnerable DNS server that has a command injection bug using the tool. So quick introduction, it's a Python-based tool or set of tools for packet crafting and sniffing, protocol manipulation like it says on the slide. Primarily what I see people use it for is fuzzing or crafting very specific packets to be able to test or see if you can circumvent a control such as a firewall or IDS or other. It decodes packets and understands hundreds of them, but it doesn't do any interpretation. It does exactly what you ask it to do and shows you what it sees. It builds packets in layers, and it's a real easy syntax to craft packets and to layer on different headers or encapsulation, whatever you want to do. You can also, of course, since it's Python-based, put it into a script or just go into an interactive mode. So our first Scapy packet, let me just jump to a command line, and we'll work through some of these
in our Linux box as well, as opposed to just looking at the slide. So first thing we'll do is type Scapy or Scapy, and it takes us into this prompt here. Depending on your version of Scapy, if you've done updates to it or downloaded the latest version or whatever Linux VM you're on, it may look a little bit different. This is an IronPython example. So either way, what we can do is say things like ls with parentheses, and that will show us all the different packet types that are supported. And again, there are hundreds of types. And if you want to look at a particular packet type to see what fields are inside of it, we can say something like, or protocol type, I should say, we could say ls and then IP as an example. And it shows us on the left all the different fields within the IP version 4 header, and they should look familiar. And then over on the far right, you can see what the default values that Scapy is going to put into there or into it are. So let's take a look at another example. How about ls IPv6? And here you can see the IPv6 header, which has fewer fields, but it's got a ton of extensions, of course. So I'm going to go ahead and clear the screen, and let's create our first packet. We'll simply say p for packet equals IP, and I'll set the destination to equal 10.10.10.60. Actually, let's do 70. That's our lab server. Now, if you're doing this across the remote network, you might have to change or set the interface to your tap interface, but it will tell you that in the lab. So we'll create that, and if we say P by itself, it just shows us what our packet looks like so far, and only the fields that we've modified. If we want to see the whole packet, we can run ls and then our variable as the argument, and it will show us what we've changed things to. So you can see down where it says source and destination, it's got the target set to 10.10.10.70, and it's default using my IP address, what I've set it to on my Linux box here, to 10.10.12.12. So now that we've got the IP header, let's layer on a TCP header. So I'll say p/equals, so I'm layering on an IP, actually TCP header, and we'll set the destination port to equal 80, because I believe that to be open. And now we'll say send receive one, so send out the packet, and when you get an answer, then go ahead and stop, just a single answer. And we'll get more into the ways you can send packets back and forth here in a moment. And I'll just say p. So we do that, it says finish sending one packet, receive two packets. So if you see above, it shows a dot and then an asterisk. An asterisk is a packet that matches a response, or it's a response to one of the packets we sent out. And a dot just means it's some other packet. Since it was sniffing, it saw it, but it was unrelated to what we sent out. And we can see in the results here that the flags set are SYNAC. So we got our SYNAC packet back from 10.10.10.70, and now we know the port is open. So again, very simple example. So layering, we just looked at an example of layering. You can layer on separate lines by using /equals with the same variable name, or you can do it all in one line as well. If we go back here, we can say something like send receive one, and same as we did before, but all in one line. So I'll say IP, and then destination equals 10.10.10.70 as a string, and then we layer on TCP, destination port equals 80, and then we just close that out, and we accomplish the same goal, but on a single line. So you can do it on separate lines or a single line. And in this example on the slide, we're creating an ICMP unreachable payload. Again, we can create anything we want with this tool. So we say IP header and then the ICMP header, and we're specifying the type and code for an ICMP unreachable payload, which is type 3, code 0. And then we're layering on the data portion of the ICMP packet, which is a IP header and a UDP header. We're making it look like the source 10.10.10.70 when going to the destination 10.10.10.10 on port 135, so for Microsoft RPC, was unsuccessful. So we can make it look like things are happening on the network that aren't really happening, which is kind of interesting. And it's another great way we can test, detection devices and things, or log servers, to see what they pick up.